You guys have any questions before we move on? Anything you want to chat about? No, we good? Yes, sir?
Do you think that, like, reparations should just go to, like, one, like, group? Or, like, should it target, like, people that are in the same kind of, like, socioeconomic, like, group? Because...
That's an interesting question. What do you mean by that?
Well, like, there are, like, white people that have, like, been disenfranchised, like, recently, like...
Recently is the key. Recently is the key.
Well, the country, like, deindustrialized, right? So, like, a lot of people in, like, manufacturing jobs and stuff, like...
Right. But to your question, I think you have to understand what the word reparations means first. So reparations, you are repairing something that you have broken. You are paying for something that you were supposed to pay for. I'm not saying that there aren't people living in America today who are suffering and are going through pain and strife because of what's happening when it comes to machines taking jobs, factories becoming industrialized, etc. But reparations is a specific conversation about a specific time in America, and that is black people were slaves. You know what I mean? I've even heard people say, like, oh, but there were some of the Irish who were indentured. Like, yeah, slavery. Look at the numbers, look at the time, look at the level of work. You could not work toward your freedom. For most black people in America, this was a time when you lived and died as a slave. And so that's what reparations is about. And so I hear what you're saying, but I think that's a completely separate conversation that needs to be had about the now. Because if you are not careful, what you then do is you combine everybody's suffering into the same ball and you make it seem like all injustices have the same weighting, and they don't, just like crimes. You know, theft isn't the same as murder. We don't try them the same way. And as much as there is a white person who's suffering today, I feel for anybody who's suffering because I know what it's like to be poor. I know what it's like to suffer. I didn't come from a wealthy family. We struggled when I was growing up. But I also understand that there are levels of that suffering. You know, and so sometimes white people, it does block a white person because you go white privilege, and a person goes, I'm poor and I'm white. Where's the privilege? You know, white people are like, I wish I could activate my white privilege. I wish I could do it right now. White privilege, give me something. I get that. Trust me, I get it. It is hard to accept that you have benefits because of the color of your skin if you cannot see the benefits that you have. But the thing I try to explain to a person is, think of it more like golf. Don't think of it as privilege, then think of it like a handicap. Right? In golf, they acknowledge that you are in a position where you need so many advantages to be competitive in the game. Right? So what they say is you have a handicap of 15. So that means, like, you're going to be hitting from this tee and you get more chances to get the ball in because we understand the position you're in. And if you're a black person in America, from slavery, from day one, the number of injustices that have held black people back in America amount to an insurmountable, like, you look at black people's freedom, you look at black people's land, just land alone. The amount of wealth you can acquire over time if you own land is exponential, because you have the land, you have the fact that you can borrow based on the land, you have the fact that you can use the money that you have borrowed to grow more wealth, you can use it to grow your family's wealth. Just taking that away from black people alone is crippling them. And so you combine that with slavery, and then you look at Jim Crow laws. You didn't let black people in America live in the areas that they wanted to live in. They couldn't get loans from the banks that they wanted to get loans from. And then on top of that, when they started getting the loans from American banks were found to be giving them higher interest rates when in fact they were the same risk as many of the other races that they were giving loans to. So when you combine all of those things, I think it's safe to say that black Americans have a conversation that they need to be having with the United States. Doesn't involve me, doesn't involve white people, doesn't, it's like, yo, American government, meet the black people. That's it. Have that conversation.
I'm rewinding your message, preparing it for playback.
The Judge Joe Brown Show, presented by Valerie Denise Jones. Uncensored truth with a legal twist. Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 929-477-1167. Now, welcome your host, the celebrity consultant, Valerie Denise Jones.
Thank you, Judge Joe Brown. Thank you, Big Media, for having me. It's really important for us in Skid Row to share our perspective, you know, to have the opportunities. You know, it's not about grandstanding. It's not about self-glorification, self-promotion. We have real truths, real dire issues that need to be addressed, and it's very frustrating when people are being lied to. We can see they're being lied to. We know it because we're living the streets. It's amazing how you hear the mainstream media just take, you know, whether it's the politicians or the nonprofits or these outside entities, and take their word, whatever they're pushing, at absolute truth. And when we know that it's 100% lie, or it's flawed, significantly flawed, or partially flawed. And so where's the due diligence and the fact-checking, the portion through journalism, through media, even in today's society, you know, your listeners can do a lot of fact-checking. I stand by every word I said. I challenge, just like I've always done, any politician, any law enforcement AG officer, any nonprofit, you know, down business sector, any folks that have anything that try to challenge or question anything I said, I challenge them to a duel, if you will. We can live stream it. We can record it live. We can, you know, we can debate on big media media networks. And, you know, we can get to the bottom of this. We stand in truth. We stand firm in what we know. We thank you for supporting what we do. And those that support us in terms of creating the Skid Row Neighborhood Council, it's real simple. Contact us at SkidRowNeighborhoodCouncil.com. I'm on Facebook as General Jeff. I'm on Instagram as @SkidRowGeneralJeff. And I'm on Twitter at @GoSkidRowGo.
Yes, thank you. So this definitely demands a part two and possibly three, because we do have to cover you as an artist. But yeah, man, I can only do this. This is all I got for you, because I am speechless right now. So here you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, General Jeff. General Jeff, my homie. Yeah, Jeff, my dog.
Yeah, you're definitely deserving of our biggest applause. Definitely that. So please make sure that you keep in touch. I'm going to make sure I stay in touch, because I want to do a follow-up, because I want to hone in on a few more topics that we didn't get a chance to address, because this is so big. So I do understand why certain titles are linked to you, like mayor and general and, you know, savior and all these other different things. So I definitely appreciate you. And again, thank you, Jeff, ECP Media, for introducing us. I just don't know how to say thank you enough. But if you want to hang out and talk about reparations, I would love that. Because, like I said, I know you're busy. I know.
Boy, would I?
I know, right? I know that, right? That's another big conversation, but yeah. So we're celebrating Juneteenth, so to speak. Yes.
Sure.
And Maurice brought it up, and I thought it was a great idea that we discussed this, because I wanted to do something for Juneteenth. I just didn't know what to do specifically. And then there you go, the celebrities and the politicians afforded me this opportunity. So yeah, if you can hang tight for a second, and we always give the judge the first word, and then we'll open up the mic to all who want to to discuss the subject, and I will come to you. You'll be one of the first, and we'll see what you got to say. But here is the actual clip. It's about a minute long, and then I'll end it with something that's more of an extended version, where you'll get to hear a little bit of what Danny Glover had to say specifically. And yeah, I'll just stop there for the sake of time. It's 5 o'clock. Here we go.
A big hearing on Capitol Hill will raise the issue of reparations for slavery. This on Juneteenth, the day commemorating the end of slavery in the U.S. Chief Congressional Correspondent Mary Bruce is there covering it all. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Robin. Well, as the nation commemorates the end of slavery, the Hill today will be examining this question of reparations. Actor Danny Glover and author Ta-Nehisi Coates will be here to testify on the issue and the lasting impacts of slavery. Reparations are an issue that have come up recently on the Democratic campaign trail, but here on the Hill, the Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell made clear yesterday that he does not think reparations are a good idea. And he raised some eyebrows with this explanation referencing President Obama. Take a listen.
We've tried to deal with our original sin of slavery by fighting a civil war, by passing landmark civil rights legislation. We've elected an African-American president.
Mitch McConnell went on to reference the fact that no one currently alive was responsible for slavery, and he said it would be hard to determine who exactly to pay reparations to. Robin?
His statement raised a lot of eyebrows, to say the least. And...
All right.
Yeah, let me say something real quick. This Ali, I'm going to say mine real fast. They don't want to change. They want to keep it like it is, and it's going to be a problem. And the problems that we have are never going to change at all. So only thing you can do is change yourself and do the footwork and your due diligence for whatever you think you can do to make a change in your community, because these people are not coming, period.
Okay. All right. Anybody else?
Yeah, hello. Yeah, I got a ton of stuff to say. First of all, you know, what this guy said is, not only is it preposterous, it's extremely laughable, even though this is not a laughing matter. You can't, after the fact, say, you know, oh, well, this is what that was. If you're going to attribute something to account for something, especially when we're talking about a debt that is owed, you can't change the parameters after the fact and say, oh, by the way, that's what this was to cover that our debt way over there. That's ludicrous, and that's not acceptable anywhere on any business platform, anywhere, not only in this country but around the world. If you know what I took from that, though, is the admission that McDonald did admit that United States owes reparations. You know, while he's saying, "Oh, if that debt was paid," no, he admitted that there was a debt. And so let's stop. It's a two-part conversation.
Did you think he was alluding to the fact that our debt was paid, or their debt was paid when they gave us President Obama? Like, are we?
No, they didn't give us. First of all, let's put that in perspective. You know, I mean, because again, there's so much to lift up out of that. Let's understand, when white America, like President Obama, could not get in on the black vote alone, there had to have been a significant amount of white America to vote for him. The reason why white America voted President Obama was because the country was unraveling and the entire country was about to implode. And so George W. Bush, you know, they deregulated everything, and it got to a point where white America panicked. And so in their sense of dire panic, because remember, folks was lining up to snatching their money out of banks until they said, hold on, stop the banks, don't give out any more money, because the country was about to implode, period, permanently. And so that they had – white America chose to elect a president that could right the shit, that could sustain and turn things around and get America back onto to the legitimacy and the stability that it needed. And so in that regard, President Obama did white America a favor. So that wasn't – he didn't do anything for black America. So let's put that in proper context first and foremost. But then when you lift up what McDonald was talking about as far as, you know, the reparations portion, okay, there are two parts to that. The first part is the admission of a debt, that there is a debt that was incurred. And so to this day, America has not officially admitted, you know, in any, you know, significant platform that, you know, slavery happened, we apologize for it, and, you know, we acknowledge that there was insurmountable debt that happened, and the African Americans are owed, you know, payment in some way, shape, or form, some type of reparation or retribution. And so once that happens, then we have to look at what is the actual amount. And so, you know, when you hear as high as $14 trillion, so of course, white America is saying they're not interested, or they're not interested, they're not capable of paying that. You know, so it's one thing to owe money, it's a whole other thing to pay it. And so right now, I think the most important thing for African Americans is to get white America across the board to admit that they owe us reparations.
Wow, that's deep. Maurice, I opened up your mic because you brought this to my attention. Would you like to say something before I start asking questions?
Yeah, I would like to say, for what I've seen at that event a couple of days ago, to me it was just a big, big farce. Malcolm X once said years ago about our people have a big flaw in always letting entertainers be spokesmen for our situation. And the thing is, not only do they send in entertainers, they sent in people who really didn't speak about this from the jump. If anything, they was afraid to have somebody like Dr. Claude Anderson out there who's been speaking about reparations for decades now. And I mean, if you're going to have an entertainer, have somebody who's politically savvy, somebody like a Killer Mike up there to really, you know, bring it home. But to me, it was kind of like they orchestrated on who they wanted to have up there to represent and speak for us. And it really kind of pissed me off to the point where they did it on Juneteenth. So it's like, you know, no disrespect to Ta-Nehisi Coates, Danny Glover, and the rest of those guys, man. It was just like, to me, it was just a whole big facade of what they were doing. It was just a big farce. And, you know, they really did not push the button further than what it was supposed to go to. And I was just befuddled about it. But once again, you know, if they're going to orchestrate who they're going to have representatives to speak for us, then when it's all said and done, it's like our voices are totally unheard. And more importantly, they didn't even have, you know, the people who really kicked the whole thing off. I might have my disagreements with them, but like Antonio Moore and Yvette Carnell, those are the ones who really been, you know, pushing the ADOS movement and making sure that we have our reparations. And it was like, you know, they're going to sweep the real people under the rug and have who they choose to have up there, because when it's all said and done, it's going to just be, once again, a strong cup of coffee when you add cream and sugar to it. It waters down the whole movement. So that's where I'm speaking on from.
Wow. Does anybody else have anything to say? Officer Whitaker, you're very quiet. And I know that you wanted to verbalize a couple things as it relates to the subject matter. Can you do so at this time?
I think I agree with Maurice. It was a show, and it's one of those things that our president likes to say, hey, look what I'm doing. He can use this to say, well, they never had hearings about reparations before, and I allowed it. We all know that his talk about allowing this hearing for reparations is just like his talk about the wall. For them to grant reparations, they have to admit that a wrong was done, and they will never admit that a wrong was done. Never, ever, ever. But we all know that. They didn't even give us civil rights. We had to fight for civil rights. It wasn't granted to us. We weren't freed as slaves. Then they said, okay, you all are equal, because we aren't equal now. If we're equal now, why are they so much looking at the black unemployment rate? If we are equal, then it's just an unemployment rate. But it shows you that things are still measured, and how to keep an eye on it. It's like, okay, well, blacks are doing like this, so we need to keep an eye on that. So it's just all bullshit.
Right. I want to play this last clip and go around the board and get your opinion regarding this. Hopefully the judge will get back in so we can get his words before we wrap the show. Oh, you're here? All right.
I'm here.
Well, have you heard, did you hear anything, or can I move forward? And this will be your refresher.
I heard what the man said. Like I say, I kind of stay out of things sometimes so the discussion can go where it goes. Just my contemplation on what I saw on reparations. All they were talking about is whether or not to set up a committee to start studying the problem. And studying the problem in federalese does not mean anybody's going to pay for anything. It just means what political advantage is going to accrue to whatever party prevails on setting up the study. That's all. Now, I'm not too happy with the situation, and
quite frankly, there is an undertone that I hear some places where there are white people who are speaking candidly, and it's like what they're asking, what we're asking for is like being the punk who is trying to petition the bully to apologize for beating him up. You don't get an apology from the bully when you're still in the situation of being liable to be beat up by the same bully beat up again. You got to have some power. And until we get that, nobody's going to give us anything. Not give us, let's put it this way, recognize there is a debt. But right. That's what it is.
Right.
Okay.
Now, the actual session was several hours long, but I want to play you guys this last clip. It's about 3 minutes long, and then we'll talk before we wrap today's show.
First of all, one of the things I tried to make clear in my testimony is that we perceive the era of enslavement, the era of Jim Crow, and in fact, I would actually even add the era of mass incarceration as separate things that are somehow not tied to each other. The greatest damage that enslavement did, besides the economic damage, besides the normalization of torture, of rape, besides the normalization of treating people as though they are things, is the institution in the American mind that black people are necessarily inferior. If I injure you, the injury persists even after I actually commit the act. If I stab you, you may suffer complications long after that initial actual stabbing. If I shoot you, you may suffer complications long after that initial shooting. That's the case with African Americans. There are people well within the living memory of this country that are still suffering from the after effects of that. In H.R. 40, this body has a chance to both make good on its 2009 apology for enslavement and reject fair weather patriotism, to say that a nation is both its credits and its debits, that if Thomas Jefferson matters, so does Sally Hemings, that if D-Day matters, so does Black Wall Street, that if Valley Forge matters, so does Fort Pillow.
Talking about the city of San Francisco, this liberal city that has this great tradition around labor and everything else. We talk about Harry Bridges and what he did, and longshoremen, and bringing African Americans to longshoremen. And then I've watched the evisceration of cities and people's lives because of crack cocaine and mass incarceration as well, right in my neighborhood, right in my family, and often. So those are the kind of long-term impacts that we don't realize that happened. Those children who were the descendants, not only slaves, but the descendants of those generation who had the opportunities after World War II. Those children did not have the same opportunities. And now those children are abandoned as adults in that city, in that great city. So I think we have to kind of look at this, as people say often, that this is just a study, a look at racism and all of its manifestation in terms of gentrification as well. I was in the Fillmore area in 1966, going to West Edition Community Organization meetings, where people were desperate to find different ways in which they were not being removed from their communities. These are real issues that happen. They're long-standing issues that go back and find themselves resonating in slavery and going further than that. All the material that we have, all the books that we have now, all the studies that have been done has outlined that. We have to begin to say, to tell ourselves the truth.
The stain of slavery was not just inked in bloodshed, but in the overt state-sponsored policies that fueled white supremacy and racism and have disadvantaged African Americans economically for generations. Many of the bedrock policies, in fact, that ushered generations of Americans into the middle class were designed to exclude African Americans, from the GI Bill to Social Security, intentionally designed to exclude blacks, as was school segregation, redlining, neighborhoods like the one in which I live, which were by design walled off and disinvested in.
All right, guys. You're listening to the Judge Joe Brown Show. I'm Valerie Denise Jones, 929-477-1167. You just heard an audio clip again. It is only 3 minutes of I think, 2 or 3 hour session that was on YouTube. So please make sure that you Google it and listen to the audio in its entirety. Now, I just want to remind people, for those of you who do not know, H.R. 40, 115th is a commission to study and develop reparation proposals for African Americans, for the African Americans Act. The summary was written by the Congressional Research Service, and here's a little bit about it. The bill establishes the commission to study and develop reparation proposals for African Americans to examine slavery and discrimination in the colonies and the United States from 1619 to the present, and recommend appropriate remedies. Now, to the panel, I'd like to ask you guys, first, if you have anything you'd like to say regarding the audio clip, but my final question to you is it relates to the two audio clips that was played during the second half is, how do we explain this to millennials who feel like they're not being excluded? Because they feel like they can live out loud, they have no limitations, there are no disadvantages as it relates to what they can do, because social media is the savior. It is that thing that binds us, keeps us connected, and as long as you don't consider yourself inferior, then such is not the case. So the stain of slavery does not exist, and they're probably sick and tired of hearing about it, just as I guess a lot of the Saltines, a.k.a. the white folks, are, because they feel like, hey, you know what, out of 45 presidents, we gave you one, that, again, we should be even at this point, we gave you 8 years, and whatever you got out of it, that's your reparation. So I know that was a lot, but would you guys like to address what I just said, also the audio clips?
Yeah, this is General Jeff. I would absolutely love to.
I'll address when I'll wait my turn, but, you know, I've got something to say on that. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, this is General Jeff. And so, you know, while you ask a question, to address your question first, when you talk about the millennials, and I'll say it doesn't matter if it's millennials, senior citizens, you know, whoever it is, and when it comes to reparations, it's just like any other class action lawsuit to me. Folks can either opt in or opt out. If they don't feel that this applies to them, then opt out and get out of the conversation. It's real simple because they're in the way. Unnecessary conversation and dialogue doesn't need to happen in terms of the primary moments in terms of the discussion. Now, as far as reparations, you know, I look at the discussion of reparations is equivalent to the potential filing of a lawsuit. It's absolutely disappointing for me as a strong black man to listen to, you know, a case for reparations be, you know, even if it's half-heartedly be made on behalf of African Americans. To me, this is our case to file, so this is our case to be made. And so in order to have a legitimate conversation, first of all, whether it be the Congressional Black Caucus or whomever, black folks need to get, you know, get together with other black folks, and we need to have our conversation amongst ourselves first. The reason why is because we need to determine our number. While sure, reparations is not just limited to financial reparations, but that is a significant part. And so it doesn't make sense for us to rely or defer to white America to make our case, to come up with our number, to negotiate for them to start the process. It doesn't matter what they do. If we're serious about this as a people, we need to come up with our own number. Me personally, I did not pick any cotton, so I don't feel that I'm entitled to a full a percentage. So, but based on that, I am a direct descendant of those that did. And so now we have to figure out what that number is, you know, the equivalent of what minimum, even whether it's minimum wage or livable wage, you know, what is that? What was it back then? How does that equate? There's interest, you know, there's a lot of different mathematical components to determining what that number is. And so we need our mathematical leaders, you know, our along with our historians, so that we can put in proper perspective what not only the ramifications are in terms of the wages are, but also, you know, the multiple splits in terms of the profits that were generated. And so, you know, there's a lot of different numbers that happen. So we need mathematical leaders to lead this conversation to help us create this number. Once we as people, African-American people, come up with our number and finalize our number, then we can put that on the table and say, here is our number. Another component is, while white America snatched us into slavery, there are also Africans that sold us into slavery. So there's another number that needs to be applied towards Africa. And so there's two multiple conversations. But right now, while we're talking about the conversation that's only applied to white America, it should only be limited to specific conversations with white America, but it needs all the numbers, all the mathematical equations, all the components, everything needs to be initiated and agreed to and put forth by African American people ourselves.
Okay, sounds good. Let me put in a few little realities here. One, most of the injury that we suffered was caused by individuals, but the problem is any kind of action for personal damages dies with the offender. And it's been 155 years, been 20 years, 15 years, 30 years. For the most part, when it comes to governmental action, it's local or state action that caused us a lot of grief. And even if you get in terms of the federal enablement, what with the Constitution, there is this inconvenient thing called sovereign immunity. You cannot, in American law, sue a governmental entity unless it permits itself to be sued. So the question of filing a lawsuit is basically dead in the water because there's no enablement by either local, state, or federal legislation that would allow such a lawsuit against either of those specific types of entities. So you have to enact what they call an appropriations bill to pay out or to another investigatory act, to which is what they have right now on H.R. 40, to investigate whether or not immunity should be waived on behalf of the federal government and claims made. As far as that goes, again, there are going to be some interesting things, like Barack Obama wouldn't even qualify for reparations because he has no black American ancestors, though I have seen some little inference about maybe his mother had one somewhere in the woodpile, but it doesn't look like that. He has an Irish ancestor who came over after the Civil War. In fact, he went to that Irish county in Ireland with his wife while he was U.S. president to visit. They welcomed him with open arms, and now they have a Barack Obama center in that Irish township. But who's going to be black? And then the other thing is, as I know from my age, families used to have 8, 9, 10, 12 siblings, and one or two could pass for white, and one or two were obviously anything but. So what about those people? They had the same ancestry, so would they qualify for reparations when, let's say, they had 28, 34, 52% African in them, but they didn't appear to be black, whereas somebody who got the appearance gene might only have 34% African but appear African? So do they get qualified for it based on just color or based on ancestry? Then you've got all of the people that would object to a DNA test because they said that's going to be the precursor to them waging biological warfare on African-Americans or black folk or whatever we want to call ourselves. And then we got people who we've got a new rising trend about we are actually a lost tribe of Israelites and we settled America before the Indians got here, Native Americans got here across the Alaskan Russian land bridge from Siberia way back when. So, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff out there.
and these people all push passionately for their particular point of view. So pragmatically, you've got to set up a bureaucracy after you get an appropriations bill through the House. The same bill's got to pass through the U.S. Senate. Then it's got to be approved by a president. If he vetoes it, then both houses have to override the veto with a two-thirds majority. And then assuming it survives all of that and gets made a law, then it's got to survive constitutional challenge before the U.S. Supreme Court based on action brought by some state or states or entities or individuals who have a derivative standing in the whole matter. So it's not a slam dunk, even if somebody says, let's pass it. And you still have that matter about how we got to this point. We did have reparations. At the end, toward the end of the Civil War, Grant approved a proposal by, that's General Grant, Union commander, approved a proposal by General Sherman, which was to take the land of the people in rebellion and give it to slave families, 40 acres and a mule per family. Lincoln signed off on that. The House and the Senate signed off on that. They were Republican dominated. Things were going well. And then the war officially ended, and while we whoopee, Abraham Lincoln got assassinated. Democratic President Johnson, not LBJ, but the Johnson from Tennessee, became president, and he issued an executive order blocking all of that, and then it all fell apart. So we started off with 40 acres and one damn mule, which is not insignificant in terms of today's value, on 40 acres and one damn mule compounded on a semi-annual basis at a reasonable rate of interest. It would be significant. But this thing about we got our reparations because we got our first black president is tied up in this little theory that they have of as good a set of citizens as the Irish have been, and as much as they suffered, and they were non-white officially until 1878 by a joint act of Congress to celebrate their performance on both sides in the Civil War. Well, they've only had one Irish American president, John F. Kennedy. So what are you guys right. complaining about? You got one Barack Barry Sotoro Obama, who is a Kenyan American Indonesian. Great. So where are we? Nowhere. And what happens if they come up with it? Do you get any equity or any change from what has really gone wrong with us, which is acquiring those things, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, that we needed or need to make it in the modern world? And then the biggest whammy that's been thrown at us in 50 years is the abolition of affirmative action. That was everybody's passport out of poverty in the hood situation. So once they ended that, they went back to using all sorts of dodges to keeping the Negro from being educated. And it's interesting what we've done to ourselves. We talked about, I mentioned Grant, General Grant, who in his memoirs noted that as a commanding Union general toward the end of the Civil War, he had a survey done with the Union Army, and he says initially he was astonished to discover that the only Confederate in the whole Union Army were black. And then he says on reflection, he says it's not surprising because he never personally observed or heard from anybody else that they had observed a black soldier who was not reading a book in his spare time or writing something. And he said they didn't drink. They were enterprising, they practiced hygiene, they were of good order, they were courageous, had initiative, and they were very learned in seeking more knowledge. So what happened between then and now? You see, we start looking for panaceas, and we fail to look in the mirror on the morning and start saying, what can we do about it, irrespective of whether anybody decides to let us have something? Because, quite frankly, our main problem is the descendant of that Union Army. It's been whipping behind for a long time. And if it hadn't won the war, it sure as hell inflicted the heaviest casualties. So we have that equivalent modern day wise, and we have had some uprisings over the last 50 years in various urban centers. But what do? Send in the National Guard, which is an adjunct of the U.S. Army, and then everything settles down. Another thing to think about in this context, when's the last time we've had a black activist who is a political activist assassinated since Dr. King? It's been more than 50 years and we haven't. We've had rap stars, entertainers, and athletes, but they have not been political people or people who led a social, cultural movement. Well, we just haven't had. So what has gone wrong? We have people who have been in the business of distracting us. They've had their little fisticuffs, so to speak, and murders and homicides and street cred moments and a few tragedies like Nipsey Hussle. But, you know, he paid for the consequences of having been a gangbanger at one time, which is a real – that's not cool. Gangs are not cool. But gangs, drug dealing, thugism, pimping, hoeing, living off of the women, and playing drone have been glorified as dysfunctions that are now approved. And that's what we see when we go to look at the big screen or when we turn on the small ones. So we've got a long way to go before we'd even be able to use any reparations, because what did they say? A fool is soon parted from his money.
Right.
And what are we going to get out of it? Are we going to get education, medical care? We're going to get financing for enterprise, for business? What do we do about setting this up? Why don't we just get the laws fair, for God's sake? Why don't we stop dealing with patronizing and promoting institutions like Hollywood, which in my 70-some years is frankly the most racist institution I've ever worked around or about? I mean, it's absolutely horrible. So I moved to Memphis, Tennessee from Los Angeles back in the very early 70s. And look, the old South wasn't as racist as what I ran into in Hollywood in the 15 years I had that show. So we look to some of the worst racists in the country's history who hate us with a passion, particularly if we're straight. And we look to them for what our reality is. That's crazy.
So again, what do you guys?
We're gonna have to deal with it on our own and take it, demand it. In other words, saying if you don't, there's gonna be hell to pay. And see, we if you don't, it'll be wrong. I mean, it's so bad of you guys to have set up this Constitution and all these laws that have just been so bad, and we've suffered so much over the last 155 years and then before that over slavery. Don't you think it's only fair? To hell with that. We've got to be in a position to say, all right, look, sucker, if you don't deal with it, there's going to be hell to pay, and it's going to start being a tab paid very quickly. You know, they get real competitive when we start getting ready to have social unrest.
I heard that, and I also want to ask you to also address the millennials, because we have people like a Candace Owen, who I think, if my memory serves me correctly, she's an American conservative commentator and just straight-out political activist who found fame because of her pro-Trump activism, and also she endorsed a lot of what Kanye West was saying about, and I know the judge loves that name, what Kanye West was saying about reparations. But being that millennials are so driven as it relates to diversity and inclusivity, I'm just, can you guys address, like, because they feel like, hey, why are we talking about what happened in the past, you know, when you have all these opportunities, you're afforded all these opportunities, you can kind of just do what you need to do, you know what I'm saying? And it's all based on your understanding of your own environment. What do you say to the millennials who just
feel like it's like a nagging old girlfriend or a nagging wife who keeps bringing up the past and just won't let you move forward.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Very simple, Valerie. Don't be no fool, and you reap what you sow. So you're going to be the one still breathing and whining and crying and carrying on about what you about to run into. You think Trump did all this? Uh-uh. It's what's been out there that he just allowed you the chance to look at because the media wanted to associate it with him and started covering it. That same media you love so damn much is trying to shaft you. So go for it and see what you get when you do absolutely nothing except be a pacifist little punk and get run over. Now, you know, I won't be here to see it. Ain't my problem,
right.
I can say. But it is because I've got a conscience.
Correct. Right. All right, so we're down to our last 15 minutes here. So I'm just going to go around the board real quick, get your final thoughts before getting your contact information and tossing it to the judge for the final word. But do you guys have anything that you'd like to say? I guess we'll start with you, General Jeff, because you're today's guest. Anything that you want us to hear as it relates to this? Because it just seems like a never-ending saga. And sometimes I understand, sometimes I get it. But for me, reparations to me is like better healthcare, like you were talking about the housing, just staying out of our history, you know what I mean? Stealing all of our, you know, all this whitewashing, just stay out of our business, education, just something that would just look a little more like we're on an equal platform. I truly believe we could go back to our whole little Black Wall Street type of environment where we did our thing and they do their thing, we'd be okay. You know what I'm saying? We wouldn't have to harp on reparations as much. But when we are always being targeted, then we feel like, hey, you know what? We deserve XYZ because, damn, you were in our business then. You're in our business now. So we're owed this. You know what I mean? So that's enough. Because I could go on all day. It's a lot that I don't understand regarding this. But, Jesus. So yeah, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Sure, you know, and I think my focus, is more on the trauma that was caused. And so, when we talk about reparations, I don't know if there is an applicable formula that properly diagnoses trauma. Trauma is on a case-by-case basis. When you talk about the individual or a family or a lineage of each individual slave, if you will, how do you properly assess the trauma that passed on from not only existed in the individual, but passed on from generation to generation. I think that in the best interest of African Americans in this country, we would have to come up with our own formulas and go totally away from anything that, whether it's Sigmund Freud, or any of the other so-called European scholars, we would have to go totally away from that because there are lots of omissions that are not accounted for, specifically as it pertains to everything from systemic oppression, the negative stereotypes that are associated to criminalization of, not only the African-American as a people, but, me specifically is different from African-American male as opposed to African-American woman. And so without getting too divisive, but we still have to understand that it's on a case-by-case basis. So in essence, there are a multitude of solutions in terms of formulas that need to be created so that they could be applied appropriately. And this is only just in the realm of trauma, and that in and of itself is virtually – based on at face value, whatever the systems of addressing trauma today based on white American solutions and formulas, it's impossible to accurately create formulas that will appropriate and account for anything that would be included in terms of any type of retribution, specifically as it pertains to slavery. And I mean, I can go on and on and on, but for the sake of time, I'm going to pass the mic to the other folks because, you know, I don't want to hog up all the time, but, you know, this is a very a serious conversation that needs much more in-depth analysis, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak, but I want to pass the mic to my colleagues on this interview. Thank you.
Yeah, so hang tight because I want you to, again, repeat, that's redundant. I want you to repeat your contact information before we exit. I added 904-753 to the conversation. That will be the last line I opened. We are out of time. We have it exactly 10 minutes and a few seconds before they turn off the lights here. So 904-753, your mic is live. If you have something you'd like to say.
Yes, hi, Valerie. This is Emmanuel. I just want to say that I thoroughly, yes, hello. I want to say that I thoroughly, you know, I came to this show to support you and the conversation that we had, but I ended up learning so much. And I want to thank Judge Joe Brown for, you know, just that wonderful lesson in you know, how we conduct ourselves in a legal situation. And so I would love if we could get some national organization that we have in our community to make it a point throughout the rest of this year to hold forums where we could learn a lot of the information that the judge was talking about, you know, like how do you even bring this type of, you know, case of reparations to the court. And like you said, you know, does the government even want to be held accountable for that? And then after that, then we need to look at, you know, how do we, you know, conduct ourselves if nothing ever comes about it. I was hoping that as a result of Donald Trump being elected, that black people would get so scared that we would return back to being educated and we would return back to supporting each other. And just for some strange reason, that hasn't been the case. So I'm going to continue to do what I can do in my own individual efforts. But once again, like I said, I would just love to see some type of national organization because I attend quite a few events that we have here in Jacksonville at our, you know, black college, and they're always bringing in some great speaker, and I always go, and I just feel like I'm going to be, I'm a choir member going to be preached at, but yet this doesn't trickle down into our broader community. So anyway, I'll leave it at that. But like I said, again, I truly was enlightened, and I think that somebody needs to pay because people got rich off of our ancestors from the day they were born to the day they died, and no one has paid for that. Thank you.
Yeah, Emmanuel raises a good question. Judge Brown and General Jeff, is there a committee that was formed for that specifically? Like, do we have a committee? Because I don't know if that's one of the
no, we don't.
The issues
we
for
don't.
NAACP or Black Lives Matter. Or, okay.
We don't. We don't. And by the way, such committees are not peaceful. People need to study real revolutions. If you study the Russian Revolution, the Chinese Revolution, the Cuban one, the North Korean one, there were a whole lot of murders, homicides, and violent episodes amongst the party faithful working out what line is going to be the party line. So it is not going to be a peaceful thing. Back in the 60s, it wasn't peaceful. But there was some consensus that got worked out. But let me just add this in here.
See, one of the things about reparations is it's a form of restitution or a form of damages. And damages in civil law is something that's awarded to keep people from taking matters in their own hands, which gets to a thing. Maybe we need to change the approach from, look, guys, we aren't asking for you to deal with the wrongs. Maybe what you need to do is pay us a gratuity for not slitting your throats while you were asleep at night, or speaking of further matters, not burning down these cities and saying if we can't have it, nobody has it. And if you want to have a bloody war, let's get it on. Now, the U.S. is, like I mentioned earlier, pretty good at whipping people's behind and doing it badly. And it's General Sherman who coined the phrase war is hell. But look at what happened after World War II. They propped Germany up. They propped Japan up. They propped the Japanese that had been interned up, gave them restitution. But the theory was is dealing with revitalized Germany and a revitalized Japan is good for American business. America does not have the perspective that dealing with black people is good for anything but being entertained. So, in other words, what do we bring to the table to make it worth anybody's while? Now, the one thing we can do, H. Rap Brown talked about it back in the 60s, was everybody's got a book of matches. Now, I'm not going to advocate that right now, but, you know, it seems like in the last 70 years, we've gotten more attention when somebody got unruly than when somebody was being nice and asking. We just need to keep that in mind. That's a historical observation. That's not advocacy in the current, present moment, forbid, so the FBI and everybody in Homeland Security doesn't start bringing out the magnifying glasses.
Right.
By the way, you can catch me on Twitter at Judge Joe Brown TV, even if I don't have the blue check. I'm tickled. I've kept a log.
Isn't that something? You don't have a blue check, but O.J. Simpson has a blue check.
You want to hear something interesting, too? For the last several days, I've kept up a little ad thing, a little private edition, and I've gotten 1,783 new followers. And by my count, I had 11 people drop, but Twitter is only crediting me with 17. That's over
That's
the last
crazy.
3 days.
That's crazy. Yeah, I don't. Oh my gosh, that's a whole nother conversation. Yeah, we're down literally to the last 4 minutes and a few seconds. Generally, Lord, God bless me, help me, Jesus. General Jeff.
Yes.
Can you give us your final words and again your contact information, please. I'm calling you General Lee.
Sure.
I'm way out of the jazz. What is wrong with me?
Right. Right. Geez, I mean, you know, I have to say, I'm very, very impressed with Judge Joe Brown's extensive knowledge on the reparations subject matter. And that, you know, is very, very eye-opening. And so, you know, I don't want to take away anything. I think the focus should end right there where that is. So I actually have absolutely nothing to add in terms that hasn't been said so eloquently by Judge Joe Brown. And so I'm going to leave that at that for me. And again, my contact information, I'm General Jeff on Facebook, on Instagram, at Skid Row General Jeff. On Twitter, I'm at Go Skid Row Go. And as far as a website, I'm the chair of the Skid Row Neighborhood Council Formation Committee, and our website is skidrowneighborhoodcouncil.com. And please feel free to contact me anytime, any place, anywhere to continue any and all discussions, specifically as it pertains to homelessness, and even more specifically, Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Definitely that. Judge, did you hear that? I don't think we ever had an ending like that. That was beautiful. So I want to, Maurice, real quick, what is your contact information, and do you have any last words?
Yeah, man. Once again, y'all can reach me on Instagram, the Mo Factor, T-H-E-M-O-F-A-C-T-O-R. And also you can reach me on Twitter, the Mo Factor, T-H-E-M-O-F-A-C-T-O-R. And also you can check out my t-shirts, www.moflytees.com. Last thing I'm going to check on, Judge drop some powerful tools about reparation. But once again, you know, they got to pay us like they owe us, bro, because they benefited off our hard work, you know, and our diligence. And the only thing they just want to do is throw their hands in the air. But once again, couldn't even cut that check. Thank you, guys.
This is Soulja Boy said, cut the check, cut the check. Yeah, so 858-322. Ali, do you have any final words? And also, what's your contact information?
You can reach me at Ali, Ali, Ali on Facebook, God Rap Man on Twitter. And, you know, my name is Ali for a reason. You know, I'm a fighter, so I'm ready to fight. Like Judge Joe Brown said, I always knew that they ain't going to never give us nothing. We can't ask for nothing. We've been, I think even Tupac said something. We've been asking. Now we got to come in the door. We starting to take now. You got to take what you want. You got to be ready to die for it. You know what I'm saying? So we got ancestors that died. Well, check it out. We the new ancestors. Get ready to die.
Okay. All right. That's the TMZ version. Appreciate that, Ali. Dad, I see you hanging out. 954. I see you hanging out in the background. I appreciate you so much. Judge, we got about 2 minutes for you. How do you sum up today's conversation? I mean, General Jeff brought a lot to our doorstep.
Today's conversation was enlightening and educational. We got into a number of things that were topical that needed some explanation. I think we got some. We got some considerations that needed to be heard. And again, I think the consensus was whatever the case may be, it's not going to get better until we do something about it ourselves. That's what I think
All
is
right.
important, self-actualization.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any references? This is something I'm going to start asking you before we wrap. Do you have any books, any videos, any articles that you want to reference, anything that you want to include in this audio clip that you would suggest, especially millennials, that we read, research, .. you know, whatever?
The millennials tend to want to read this success story stuff, and I just don't have any of those that I'm familiar with because I don't read that kind of stuff. But on the serious side, one of the things I would suggest for a foundation is to read stuff about the nature of human beings. And there is one book that I would second. It's called Humans from the Beginning. Humans from the Beginning.
Humans from the Beginning. And who's the author?
I don't have the author, et cetera, right on the tip of my tongue, but it's Humans from the Beginning. That's something
right,
people should
of
read. It's
computer.
A heavy read, and there's a lot of references, and I'd suggest you get it through. Get yourself the Kindle app. Should be free, and then you buy the book on Amazon and send it to your Kindle app, and you can browse to your heart's content when you feel like it. You might get something from that gives you a background understanding of what it's all about.
Okay. And I just Googled it. I think the author is published in 2015. The author is Christopher Sedon, S-E-D-D-O-N.
That's it. There is a 2014 edition and a 2018 edition. The 2018 edition, at least the one you'll get, has a number of typos and misspellings, but the earlier one that it modifies is pretty solid.
All right, guys. Well, you heard it here first. You've been listening to the Judge Joe Brown Show. Thank you again, Matt. Big up to General Jeff. Appreciate you so much. And I appreciate
Thank you so much for having me.
Us. Oh, you're very, very welcome. Thank you so much to our panel, Officer Whitaker, Philo. We had Ali, Maurice, and definitely a big shout-out to the judge for everything that he brings to the table. So, guys, I am going to start that. We're going to get books, articles, and just references from the judge each week so that you can carry this conversation, you know, into your household. Talk to your young people. Please do that, because we definitely don't need to leave the conversation here. All right, that's it for me. ValerieDeniseJones.com, ValerieDeniseJones.com. Have a great rest of the weekend. Please be safe. Say your prayers. Pray for a hedge of protection. I love you to life. Thank you, Judge. Thank you to everybody who joined us today. Have a great rest of the day. 929-477-1167. We will see you Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is Judge Joe Brown.
We're always interested in what you have to say about our live broadcasts. Please share your comments on our Facebook page or websites.